How does error find its way into the church? I've written an article in the latest edition of the online Issues Etc. journal titled From Exception to Rule, How Error Replaces Truth in the Church, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Jordan Cooper details his journey from Calvinism to Lutheranism. The latest Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org. What do you do with a case like this? Because we have a First Amendment in the United States that prohibits the establishment and, in by some interpretations, the hindrance of any kind of practice of religion in our country. And yet some religions, some spiritual practices, can prove dangerous to their adherents. Last month, James Ray was convicted of negligent homicide in 2009. He had 56 people aiming at personal growth, personal spiritual growth. First, they spent some time out in the desert without food or water, about 36 hours. Then he subjected them to a sweat lodge for 2 hours where a nightmarish scene unfolded. Three people, as a result, died. Now, how do you regulate that, especially when it was a spiritual, religious practice? I'm going to answer that question with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery in the last half hour of Issues Etc. live this Wednesday, July the 20th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's Distinguished Research Professor of Philosophy and Christian Thought at Patrick Henry College and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Christ, Our Advocate. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
Dr. Montgomery, here's a guy who was aiming with these people out in the desert at spiritual and personal growth. Does and should the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution protect this kind of thing?
Well, in the 19th century, when Mormons engaged in polygamy, a series of cases came up, and in Reynolds versus the United States, the U.S. Supreme Court said, you can believe in polygamy, but if you practice it, you're going to go to the federal penitentiary. That is to say, there is a limitation on the practices that one can carry out on a religious basis. One can certainly believe any crazy thing one wants to, and one can manifest this as long as the manifestations are not contrary to public order that they create a difficulty for the society in general. The Supreme Court held that polygamy created such a problem, and therefore that was not allowed. And by the same token, if one wants to believe in New Age mental cure, one certainly can do so. But if one then employs sweat lodges, taking off from Indian practice, and as a result of this subjects people to dangerous conditions, and it's impossible for an individual to get out from under this, then quite clearly these practices are not going to be allowed legally, and the First Amendment is not going to be any protection for that.
So it sounds like, at least in terms of the exercise of religious freedom in the United States, the First Amendment has been tested and tried several times with regard to the extent that society can permit religious practices.
Well, yes, this is right. The Jehovah's Witnesses, for example, will not allow blood transfusions on the peculiar ground that there was no eating of blood allowed in the Book of Acts. This is particularly strange because I've never seen a doctor engage in this practice by asking the patient to eat the blood in the case of the transfusion. But in any case, they do that. They refuse blood transfusion, and Christian Scientists for over a century have refused ordinary medical treatment. Now, if you as an adult want to refuse medical treatment, you can do so. That's not the same as euthanasia or assisted suicide. Those things have to do with an active attempt to remove you from the world or somebody else, or assisting in doing this. But this is not the same thing where, for example, minors are involved. Parents must provide suitable medical care for their children, and they can't use religious reasons for not doing this. And the same thing applies, of course, in the case of a religious practice where people don't really have control over what they're doing. They may enter into it voluntarily, but then they get into a situation where they would just love to get out of it. I suppose those people would have very much preferred to get out of the sweat lodge, but they couldn't do it. In situations like that, of course, the practice is an illegal one, and anybody who engages in this is liable for the consequences.
So in this sense, the law is going to look at, say, the case of this man with his 56 followers there in Arizona, spending 36 hours in the desert without food or water, then going to a sweat lodge where pretty much unendurable heat was imposed upon them for 2 hours. They're going to look at that, the law is going to look at that as though anyone were doing that, as opposed to someone doing it in the name of religious beliefs. It's simply a crime to do it, period. Is that a correct understanding here?
Yes, yes, this is right. This is exactly right. A fascinating aspect of this thing comes in the homeschooling area, oddly enough. There are some extremists in the homeschooling movement who have argued that the parent should have absolute control over the education of the child. This is exactly parallel to Christian Scientists and Jehovah's Witnesses saying that the parent has absolute control over the health of the child. Now, that is simply incorrect. The fact of the matter is that parental control over the child should be a major consideration, but if this moves to the point where the child's education or the child's health is jeopardized, then of course the state has to move in. The state has standards in education. This means the parents can homeschool, yes, but if the methods that they use are so bizarre that the result is that the child doesn't learn anything, then of course the state has a right to step in. And parents can deal with the medical conditions of their children. But if the way in which they do it is so bizarre and ridiculous and dangerous, then the state can intervene. And the fact that one uses religious arguments against this is utterly irrelevant.
I guess it also comes up in cases, especially here in the United States, that involve what the people practicing or claiming religious freedom would say is something like political sanctuary, as opposed to the state's interest in illegal immigration. There have been, here in the U.S., Dr. Montgomery, a whole handful of cases in the last decade or so of churches sheltering illegal aliens against deportation, saying this is the church's responsibility, this is political sanctuary. Does that play into the state's interest rubbing up against the free practice of religion, too?
Yes, it does, and churches that engage in this sort of thing are not providing a good witness to the gospel. Romans 13 says we're to be subject to the higher powers. Now, that doesn't, of course, mean committing immoral acts simply because the government has regulations along that line. Doesn't mean that, but what it means is that unless the burden of proof rests in showing that the government's action is indeed contrary to Holy Writ. And immigration laws surely are not contrary to Holy Writ. Each nation has the right to establish the standards for the entrance of foreigners into the country. When my wife and I were naturalized as English subjects, we had to go through a procedure, and this was very different from sneaking across a border, for example. And that kind of thing is allowing decency and order to prevail in the state, just as it must prevail in the church. I am very much disturbed by churches that do this kind of thing, because, for one thing, it says they don't understand the biblical position. The parallel, of course, with this medical thing is that, according to Scripture, the body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, and the church ought to be supporting competent medical treatment. I must say, I should add this, I suppose, that I am not an alternative medicine person. When I lived in Canada, McLean's magazine, the national magazine, sent out reporters to about 20 different chiropractors, all describing the same problem. And they came back with roughly 20 different solutions. Your left leg is shorter than your right leg, or your right leg is shorter than your left leg, etc. Alternative medicine is a highly dangerous area, highly dangerous. We should be very, very careful about this kind of thing. And don't listen to the Prince of Wales when he snuggles up with the Dalai Lama and they kiss Mother Earth and go into a kind of a New Age approach to these things. Let's stay on a solid scientific basis, and let's do our medical activities in accordance with investigations that have some kind of scientific value.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. Another 15 minutes with him on the other side of this break. We're coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon, July the 20th, talking about state regulation of religious practices, New Age gurus, and other claims of religious freedom. When we come back, we'll talk about what was in the mind of the framers when they put the First Amendment together, especially with regard to the free exercise of religion.
Whether you are just starting or have played your entire life, Oak Brook Golf Club in Edwardsville is your home for golf. Our 27-hole layout, fair prices, and award-winning staff, and ever-improving course conditions make your decision easy. We have always been family-owned at Oak Brook, and golf is our business. Our PGA staff offers leagues, instruction, camps, a senior scramble, and our family special where kids play free. Oak Brook Golf Club, 618-656-5600 or oakbrookgc.com.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among His people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. Issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
Issues Etc. regular guests, Pastor Matt Harrison, Deaconess Pam Nielsen, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be speaking at the Premier Worship Conference of 2011. Sing His Praise, His Love Declare. It's July 27th through the 29th on the campus of Concordia University, Nebraska. For more information on the worship conference, Sing His Praise, His Love Declare, visit Seward2011.org or call 402-643-2983. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. We're talking about the regulation of New Age gurus and other issues regarding religious freedom in the United States. You can find out more about Dr. Montgomery's many books at our website, issuesetc.org.
click listen on demand. Dr. Montgomery, let's talk about what was the context for the framers when they penned the First Amendment to the Constitution. What were they envisioning for kind of a religious landscape in this fledgling country? What were they working from philosophically, politically?
Well, to answer that, we need to understand the background of the immigration which took place to the colonies. In general, the people who arrived in the colonies, this was especially true in New England, of course, but not limited to that, was to arrive in a situation where they would not be subject to a state church. It was the state churches that had caused problems for these people. The Anglican Church insisted on the use of the Book of Common Prayer and a liturgy, both of these entirely in accord with historic Christianity, but there were those who wanted a freer kind of worship and a freer doctrinal situation. These were often people we would call Presbyterians today, people of the Calvinist variety, but also those at the left wing of the Reformation, the Anabaptist, Baptistic peoples, and they came to the United States wanting to be able to establish the kind of religious situation that would not be subject to state control. All right. Now, there were in the colonies certain states that did establish religious positions. Massachusetts Bay Colony, for example. But as a result of this, Rhode Island was created as a kind of refuge for Baptists who didn't want to be subjected to the essentially Calvinistic approach of the Puritans in New England. And in the central United States, you had Maryland, which had Roman Catholicism as the official religion, and Virginia had the Anglican Church. But it was obvious that what was really desirable was a situation in which there was no established church, where there was a level playing field in which all religious positions could vie for adherence, and the First Amendment is a direct reflection of this. Now, there is a position taken by rather to the right fundamentalists and evangelicals in the United States to the effect that the purpose of the First Amendment was only to prevent a national religion, but it was perfectly all right to have the religions in a state capacity on a lower level. I don't think for the world that interpretation is correct. It would have been bizarre for the founding fathers to say, well, we're not going to have a national religion, but it's perfectly okay to have all sorts of different religions established on a state basis. It seems to me that it's perfectly obvious that the First Amendment was to eliminate a state church across the board, nationally and on the state level. But even if one takes the argument of those people, by later constitutional interpretation through the 14th Amendment, the Bill of Rights is applicable to the states. And if it's applicable to the states, then you have exactly the same result. You cannot have a state religion. So what does the First Amendment do? It establishes a level playing field, or ought to establish a level playing field. This means, of course, also that that one cannot have a religion of secularism or a kind of a pagan civil religion, what Robert Bellow, the sociologist, calls a civil religion. You can't have that either. You've got to be able to have a neutral situation, both on the national and on the state level, so that people can choose their beliefs according to their own lights.
Now, they're trying to avoid a state church. Do you think that the framers anticipated the kind of radically plural, religiously pluralistic landscape that would eventually prevail in the United States. Do you think they anticipated? Do you think that they had something like that possibly in mind when they were talking about the non-establishment clause?
Well, they certainly would not have been able to visualize the modern pluralistic America with the New Age and cults and sects and all this kind of business. But there were a wide variety of denominations and belief systems present in the colonies. So the principle was certainly there. Are we going to allow any of these to become official religions? And the answer was no. And so that answer simply applies to a situation that's more complex today, but isn't qualitatively any different. It's quantitatively different, but it certainly isn't qualitatively different.
Could they have anticipated the need for laws to regulate religious practices that, as in the case of the Sweat Lodge homicides or the other cases that you cited at the beginning of our conversation, the state needs to impose or needs to assert its interests?
Well, I think that they were wise enough to recognize that once you get into that sort of thing, it can be highly dangerous. The way to deal with that is through the ordinary civil and criminal law. When, for example, people cannot get out of a sweat lodge and are harmed as a result of this, then you simply go to the criminal law, which does not allow one person to imprison another. This is false imprisonment. I mean, likewise, where one restricts treatment in such a way that it's impossible to get help medically. There are criminal and civil laws already in the picture that can be brought to bear on that sort of thing. And it's much better to have it done that way, because if you established regulations that are orientated specifically to religious phenomena, the tendency is to lower the degree of freedom available in the religious area. And that's tremendously dangerous. In the New Testament, it is central that people must have a right to choose. Jesus says, if any man wills to do my will, he shall understand the doctrine. He shall know that I'm speaking from God. And he says, how often I would have gathered you under my wings as a hen gathers her chicks, but you would not. The ability to make choices is absolutely essential to a solid Christian commitment. People can't be forced into Christianity. They must not be forced out of Christianity. And therefore, from a theological standpoint, it is of tremendous consequence not to have regulations that impinge on religious freedom in that respect. The way to deal with the sweat lodges and the mental cure business and the Christian Science practitioners and the Jehovah's Witnesses, the way to deal with this is through the ordinary criminal law that doesn't allow people to do those kinds of things anyway. It doesn't make any difference whether their motivation is religious.
Dr. Montgomery, we've received some rave reviews from some of our listeners who recently attended the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. With only 30 seconds, our time is short. Please tell us about the Academy.
Well, we had a wonderful session that ended just this last week in Strasbourg. The session every year deals with the most significant objections to Christian faith presented by unbelievers in our time. And we always have four of the foremost specialists in the defense of the faith worldwide present. This next summer, the program is already set. It's possible to go to the website for the Academy, www.apologeticsacademy.eu, to see that program. We are open already for registrations for next summer. The reason that we prepare all of this so early is that we can take only 20 people for the program, 20 registrants. And I would strongly advise listeners to look at that website or go to the Issues Etc. website, which gives information on this as well, and think in terms of registering just as quickly as possible. Because once we reach that limit, we simply can't take any more. Next summer, the program is absolutely magnificent. Among other people, for example, next summer we have Dr. Wilder Smith, who is an MD and a PhD. He is a specialist in scientific apologetics. He is the son of the great A.E. Wilder Smith.
About 10 seconds, Dr. Montgomery.
Of evolution.
Well, folks, we'll post a link to the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. John Ward Montgomery is a regular guest, professor emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England, French advocate and barrister at law, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Christ Our Advocate. Thank you, Dr. Montgomery.
You're welcome.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.